We are looking through the book of Mark. In the Bibles there in front of you, it's page 853. But the Gospel of Mark, what we're doing with Mark is when we come across people, okay, we're calling this series Meetings. What I wanted to do was to go through and highlight when someone met Jesus, what was their response? What was their reaction? What happened in the end? How did Jesus respond back to them? And so we're going through just kind of these character studies of who these people are. Some of them we know extremely well. Some of them we don't know that well at all. And one of the guys we're going to talk about this morning, I think if you've been around church at all, you've heard this name. You know some of the stories. We're going to highlight some of that, and we're just going to kind of skim the surface, kind of like if you take a rock and you skip it across the water. We're going to skim some of the things there, but then we're going to allow that rock to kind of drop at the end and really go in a little bit deeper with Simon Peter. And so we're going to talk about when Jesus met Simon and some of the things that Simon Peter did, but then really focus in on how Jesus kind of helped him in that last part of the relationship that he needed some help with. So let's look at Mark chapter 1. We're going to look down in verse 16, okay, 16 to 18, and then we're going to skip down to verse 29. It says this, "One day as Jesus was walking along the shore of the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and his brother Andrew throwing a net into the water, for they had fished for a living. Jesus called out to them, 'Come follow me, and I will show you how to fish for people.' And they left their nets at once and followed him." And skip down to verse 29, because there's some other stories mixed in here. It says, "After Jesus left the synagogue with James and John, they went to Simon and Andrew's home. Now Simon's mother-in-law was sick in bed with a high fever. They told Jesus about her right away. So he went to her bedside, took her by the hand, and helped her sit up. Then the fever left her, and she prepared a meal for them." Okay? So I want us to just kind of focus in on those verses because they help us to set up the story. We talked about last week that John Mark here was not present for when Jesus was doing all of his teachings and that sort of thing. He was part of that early church. His mom was a very committed believer, very wealthy, very prominent in the community, and she allowed and was part of the early believers there of meeting in her home after the resurrection of Christ. So John Mark is young at that time. He is the nephew of Barnabas. If you know of some of the stories with Paul and Barnabas, this is Barnabas's nephew. Okay, so he's got a lot of people that he's hanging around that know Christ extremely well or know of stories extremely well. So John Mark has this incredible feud or division with the Apostle Paul for whatever reasons happened there. Paul doesn't want to travel anymore with John Mark. And I think it's because he went camping with him or something like that. But he doesn't want to travel anymore with John Mark. And he says, "I don't want to have any part of it." Barnabas says, "No, I insist." They have a falling out. Barnabas and John Mark go on a different missionary journey. Paul goes on his. But in the end, Paul asks, before he's about to die, for John Mark because he says he is profitable for the ministry. So what he's done is Paul's watched him from a distance, heard the stories that John Mark has matured. And so there's this incredible reunion and a reconciliation that happens. So we talk a little bit about that. So then we say, well, then how did Mark write this book about Christ, about what all happened? I mean, was it handed down? How'd that come about? Well, what it came about was, if you read over in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 13, Peter talks about his son, even though it wasn't his quote-unquote son. He's talking about son is in the ministry, or son that someone you're very, very close to that you kind of take in as one of your own. And he talks about Mark. So what you have in front of you is actually Peter's account of everything that happened. Peter was a man of action. He wasn't going to sit around and write a book. Okay? Other people write books. Simon Peter was a doer. Okay? And if you know anything about him, he was always the man of action. He was always the apostle that was listed first in all of the lists. It doesn't matter which gospel that you go to, he's always first. So everybody knew he's the leader of some sort. Okay? Everybody knew that. There was an inner three, Peter, James, and John. We see that on a couple of occasions where Jesus would take the three of them aside. But Peter was the main focal point. And I think one of the things that Jesus appreciated so much about Simon Peter was he wasn't a talker. He was also a doer. Some people are talkers. All right, they'll talk a good game. They'll talk about going and doing this, have dreams about, hey, one of these days I want to do this. They're just talkers. They're just dreamers. But then there are people who are visionaries. They're actually going to act. Sometimes that got Peter in trouble. Sometimes his talk got him to a point where it was a little bit problematic in his life. But what I think Jesus appreciated so much about Simon Peter was, is if he was going to mess up, he was going to mess up in front of everybody. He wasn't going to do it in quiet, where no one else kind of knew that he took a risk. He just took a risk. Sometimes that proved profitable, sometimes unprofitable. So what we have with the Gospel of Mark is, this is, if you wanted to know what would Simon Peter preach about, these are his sermons. This is exactly what Peter would have preached, because what Mark did was he just traveled around with Peter, listened to everything he said, and he would just write it down. Because Mark was one of those kind of detailed kind of guys. So he would take all those things. So if you notice throughout the Gospel of Mark, the cool thing about what happens here is Simon Peter doesn't leave anything out with his celebrations, with his victories, but also with his defeats. You know, I don't know about you, but I don't know that in my preaching messages that I'm necessarily going to come out and talk about all the things that I did wrong in relationship with Christ or relationship with others. But what you will find in the Gospel of Mark as you read through it is Peter doesn't leave out when he royally messed up. That'd be a pretty tough message to teach, wouldn't it? Would you like to get up and say, hey, Jesus said this, I reacted wrongly, and he told me one time, get behind me, Satan. That's a pretty strong statement. That's huge. I don't know that I would put that in there. I would just say, Jesus didn't like it when I said that. You know, kind of soften it a little bit, but get thee behind me. Satan's a pretty big statement. And what was happening was, is the same temptation that Satan had sent, Peter had said, well, why don't we just do this? And Jesus knew this is not coming from God, and he said that statement. Pretty big statement. When Jesus lets them know that, hey, you know, I'm going to have to go and die and everything else. And Peter's thinking, no, we can't let him die. We got to take over because that's what a Messiah is supposed to be, a Messiah of that day. Everyone knew that he was supposed to come and take over and overthrow the government and they would reign. And so when you hear Jesus say this, he'd say, no. So that's why in the garden when they come to get Jesus, that Jesus is standing there and he's not giving any kind of resistance. And Peter takes out his sword and he chops off the temple assistant's ear. Okay, first of all, it lets us know that Peter was never going to win a war, because if someone doesn't know that you're about to strike at them and all you can glance is their ear, you're not a good swordsman, okay? I mean, it's kind of like, oh, I'm standing here. Wow, you only got my ear. It's not going to go well. But Peter was a man of action. Peter wasn't about to let these things happen. Peter puts it in there. He is so transparent as to what's happened with him and his Lord that he even puts in there when he denies Christ. That'd be a pretty tough message to preach, don't you think? What about for you to give a testimony and stand up, yeah, three times in front of everybody, I denied Christ publicly. Ouch. What a tough testimony to have to give. And so Mark records all this, and he's listening to Peter. He's listening to him tell the stories, and he writes it all down. And I'm sure he would go back with Peter and say, now, Peter, when you said this, you know, is this, yeah, that's what happened. You want me to write that down? Yeah, write it down. Write it down. Needs to go down. So Mark is incredibly close to Peter. This is his mentor. This is who shapes him. And it is amazing, as we touched on last week, that when Mark would look at Peter one day and go, oh man, I so disown the Apostle Paul. I mean, I don't know about you, that's not a good thing to go down in history for, you know? I so disown him, I so cause him a lot of problems. For Peter just to look at him and say, you think you got it bad? Every time I hear a rooster crow, do you realize what goes through my mind? Do you realize? Do you understand? So God picked the perfect mentor for young John Mark. Let's talk a little bit about Peter and who he was. One of the things that we know is that he's married. How do we know that? Well, we just read he's got a mother-in-law. Okay, that's pretty much how that happens. So Peter's got a mother-in-law. He's married. Goes on, and legend has it, we don't know this for sure, but historians, a lot of secular historians, talk about the death of this a man named Simon, which more than likely it was Simon Peter. And it talks about that when they were about to crucify him, most of you know that legend has it that he wasn't going to be crucified the same way Christ was because he didn't feel worthy, and so he was crucified upside down. Most historians agree that that's exactly what happened. What is also told is this, that Simon Peter, when he realized that death was imminent, that what the Romans actually did was they took Simon Peter's wife and they crucified her in front of him before he was to die. And what he did was, is as he was watching her die and she was in excruciating pain, what he shouted out to her was, "Remember our Lord. Remember our Lord." And so here is this man of action, this incredible character that Jesus chooses. I mean, of all the people out there, Jesus chooses him. This isn't an accident or oopsie, you know, I shouldn't have picked the loud, brash guy that later on will cut off a temple assistant's ear and try to get an insurrection going. But let's look at a little bit about who Simon Peter is and where he's from. If you know anything about people, where they're from can kind of tell you a little bit about them. Okay, it tells us a little bit about mindset, that sort of thing. We know that Simon was from Galilee. Josephus, who was governor there at the time, this is what he said about Galileans, okay, because he was governor of that area. He said they were ever fond of innovations and by nature disposed to changes and delighted in sedition. They were ever ready to follow a leader and begin an insurrection. They were quick-tempered, yet chivalrous. And when I read that, I was like, oh, so this is why when the young lady, when Jesus is being tested and tried in the court, this is why the young lady looks at him when he's denying Christ and says, "Your accent gives you away," because he's from Galilee. He sounds much different. And I thought when I read that whole thing that Josephus put down on paper, I was like, these are my southern friends, right? Like where I grew up there in Arkansas, when I read it, and it said they were ever fond of innovations, like, yeah, that's them. By nature, disposed to changes, delighted in sedition. I was like, yeah, that sounds pretty southern. They were ever ready to follow a leader and begin an insurrection. They were quick-tempered. And I was like, that's my southern friends. And yet chivalrous. And I was like, that's them, man. So it's like a southerner. You know, if you think of a Galilean, man, that's a southerner here in the United States. I thought, what way can I capture my southern friends? And I don't know if you've seen this site yet or not. Do we have those pictures ready, Steve? There is a website called thereifixedit.com. Have you all seen some of these? Okay. I don't know if a southerner came up with the site, but I know that the southerners were behind all the things that you're about to see. And so it's called thereifixedit.com, and they're constantly uploading new ones. Have you got the first one? Okay. This is called Surround Sound. Now, I'll give you just a minute here. Do you see what he's done? He's drilled a mounting bracket to the back of his chair and mounted the speakers right behind him. And so instead of running the speakers back to the back wall, he just has it on the back of his nice little chair there. All right, next one. Now I'll let you look at this one. Do you see what this is? Okay, that's your banister that went out there on the left. So what did we do? We took our ladder and we just took some ropes, and looks like quite a knot job that they've done here, and just attached that there, and hey, man, we're good to go. So there I fixed it, you know, right up to the swimming pool. All right, next one. Oh, World Cup people. Are they called vuvuzelas? Do I say that right? Is that right? Okay. Did I say that right? Close? Vuvuzela? Right? Okay. I'm close. All right, knock it off. I'm close. You know what I'm talking about. This is the eternal vuvuzela, or however you say that word. They've got this hand pump on it so that you don't have to blow through it. So if you watch the World Cup and you hear that sign that's really annoying, okay, that causes me not to watch with the sound up, this thing, you just keep pumping it, man. You don't have to worry about hyperventilating. You just the whole time, right? Which I thought was a great invention. And in this one is actually my favorite. You ever have that electrical line go down in the backyard? You need to prop that dude up. Just get you a cinder block down here. Get you a really long part of a branch with a fork on it, and you just prop that dude up, all right? I mean, there's no way you could get electrocuted here, right? And you notice there's no one standing by it because I think that guy's dead. Hey, John, I'll put this up. Anyway, but it's called ThereIFixed.com. And when I look at a guy like Simon Peter, I'm like, man, this guy would have grown up down the street from me. I mean, this guy would have grown up down the street from me. This sounds so normal to me. And so here's Simon Peter. He is Mr. Fix-It. Jesus says to do something, he's going to do it 10 times as much. Jesus says, who do people say that I am? And are you going to leave me? In John chapter 6, verse 66, one of the saddest verses in the Bible, the crowd wants to make Jesus king. They are ready to make him be king. Jesus refuses. They become angry at him because they want this Messiah because he's going to overthrow the government. And Jesus pulls away and says, I'm not going to do that. John chapter 6, verse 66, one of the saddest verses in the Bible, it says this, and from this time on, many of Jesus' disciples deserted him and no longer followed him. He brings his disciples together. He says an interesting question. He says, are you going to leave me too? It's a very endearing, intimate moment. And Simon Peter, the spokesman of the group, says, Jesus, where are we going to go? We know that you are the Holy One of God. Where else can we go? Great answer. Jesus is the one that, when he first meets this man named Simon, that he looks at him and he says, you've been called Simon, son of John, which means this, Simon, son of a dove, okay? Because the word Jonah there, John is the way we would say it, is the word for dove. He says, you know, for a little while, you've been known as just kind of this fisherman and this kind of son of this gentle, you know, kind of a thing, but I want you to know that you will be called Petra. In the Greek, Cephas, which means rock. Man, can you imagine if the Son of God called you by a name? You would wear that pretty well. You might even brag on that one a little. I'd at least be tempted to. But all of a sudden, you're going to go from this aimless kind of fluttering bird. You're going to be the rock. What an incredible name that he gives him. So Simon Peter kind of lives up to that. He's a little brash. He's a little flamboyant with those sorts of things. And then after his denial of Christ, which incidentally, we pick on Simon Peter for his denial of Christ, but what I do want to point out to you is this, the other 11 are nowhere to be found. At least Simon Peter shows up at the high priest's house. He's kind of hiding a little bit, but he's not doing that well because he's found out. At least he showed up. And while he failed in a public way versus just scattering. And so I want you to look at John chapter 21 because this is really the crux of the message this morning. John chapter 21, I'll give you a page number here. It's page 929. John chapter 21, I want you to read this with me because this is pretty powerful. Jesus has been resurrected. He actually gives a message to his followers. Go tell Peter that I'm risen. Pretty cool statement. Go tell Peter that, basically he's sending him a message of it's okay. Jesus has reappeared two other times to the disciples. They've seen him. Some have touched. They've heard him. They know that he's risen. But there's still a little bit of we're not sure what to do next. Because this wasn't the way that it was supposed to be. The Messiah they knew was supposed to reign here on earth, and Jesus leaves them. John 21, listen to verses 1 through 18. Later, Jesus appeared again to the disciples beside the Sea of Galilee. Notice where he is, okay? He's in Galilee. This is how it happened. Several disciples were there, Simon Peter, Thomas nicknamed the twin, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples. Simon Peter said, I'm going fishing. We'll come too, they all said. So they went out to the boat, but they caught nothing all night. At dawn, Jesus was standing on the beach, but the disciples couldn't see who he was. He called out, fellows, have you caught any fish? No, they replied. Then he said, throw out your net on the right-hand side of the boat, and you'll get some. So they did, and they couldn't haul in the net because there were so many fish on it. Then the disciple Jesus loved, this is John, okay? Then the disciple Jesus loved said to Peter, it's the Lord. When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his tunic, for he had stripped for work, jumped into the water and headed to shore. The others stayed with the boat and pulled the loaded net to the shore, for they were only about 100 yards from shore. When they got there, they found breakfast waiting for them, fish cooking over a charcoal fire and some bread. Bring some of the fish that you've just caught, Jesus said. So Simon Peter went aboard and dragged the net to the shore. There were 153 large fish, and yet the net hadn't torn. Now come and have some breakfast, Jesus said. None of the disciples dared to ask him, who are you? They knew it was the Lord. Then Jesus served them the bread and the fish. This was the third time that Jesus had appeared to his disciples since he had been raised from the dead. After breakfast, Jesus asked Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, Peter replied, you know I love you. Then feed my lambs, Jesus told him. Jesus repeated the question, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Yes, Lord, Peter said, you know I love you. Then take care of my sheep, Jesus said. A third time he asked him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt that Jesus asked the question a third time. He said, Lord, you know everything. You know I love you. Jesus said, then feed my sheep. I tell you the truth, when you were young, you were able to do as you liked. You dressed yourself and went wherever you wanted to go. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and others will dress you and take you where you don't want to go. Jesus said this to let him know what kind of death he would glorify God. Then Jesus told him, follow me. I want to give you your GPS this morning, your good practical stuff. And let's just kind of talk about this in closing here. God offers forgiveness beyond reason, which can exceed the sin beyond excuse. Listen to it again. God offers forgiveness beyond reason, which can exceed the sin beyond excuse. You know, sometimes we're a little bit rough on Simon Peter because he did deny Christ publicly three times. But I would ask you this question, when have you denied Christ? Say, well, I've never really denied Christ. I don't know. Well, what about when the subject at work comes up about spirituality or church and someone asks you, well, what do you think about that stuff? And then you do what I call soft pedaling. If you know anything about piano or anything like that, there's three pedals down there at a pianist's feet. Okay, sometimes just two, but usually three are down there. The one on the right helps sustain the chord so it sounds and goes a lot longer, but the one on the left's called a soft pedal, if you will. And you just kind of push that down so that, you know, you kind of get quiet about it. It's like you don't really mean it. And you know what that really is? It's a denial of Christ. It doesn't mean you have to be brash and ugly and hateful and rude like some people are. Where they go, well, let me tell you what you need to know. And, oh, you know, because that sounds superior and arrogant, and it is. But I think there's a way that you can humbly say to people, you know, here's what I believe. I believe Christ is who he said he was. I believe that he rose again after the third day, and that's who I want to pattern my life after. Nothing ugly or hateful or anything like that. But when those questions come up at work or someone says something about, well, what kind of church do you go to? You go, oh, well, you know, we just kind of, we got a live band, and, you know, we have a weirdo as a pastor, and you should come see it and bring popcorn, you know, whatever it might be. And you don't really answer it the way that you know, and deep down in your heart, you feel like there's something saying to you, you really didn't state all that you needed to state. And it wasn't like you needed to go on for 5 minutes, but you didn't really answer the way that you knew that you should. See, it's a denial, isn't it? Or someone asks you, are you one of those Christians? My first response is no, okay, because I'm not. I am a follower of Christ. Not every person who claims to be a Christian is. Jesus said so himself. He goes, not everybody is. Not everybody that says, Lord, Lord, will enter into the gates of heaven. So guess what? I'm just quoting Jesus here. There are some Christ, quote, followers that aren't Christ followers. They're ugly, rude, hateful, arrogant, whatever you want to put in there. There are a ton of them. You ever notice that CNN, Fox, and all those others, they always get the weirdo to represent us. They always get the one that's flamboyant and just kind of off the wall. And you're going, oh, man, that's so not. It's so not. It's because that's the dude that sends out all the press releases saying, hey, I'll come on there and talk about it, and I'm very controversial. So what do they want? They want good TV. They want controversy. That's what they put on there. They're not going to put you on there that says, yeah, we just love Christ and we're trying to serve this city. They go, okay, well, let's interview somebody else. And that's not what they want. They want something radically different. Unfortunately, though, that's what's in front of people. But there's a way in which you can say, this is who Christ is. Now, I want you to look at how Christ restored this relationship. First of all, it was not uncommon for a man to be on the shore waiting on the boat to come in. That's what people who ran the market did. That was not out of the ordinary. So the people who ran the markets would go down to the seashore early in the morning to see what people had caught, and then they would pick out what fish that they wanted, and they would pay the fishermen right there. It's not like what we've got today, okay? That's what they would do. Well, you're talking about fresh fish. I'm talking about the thing still flopping, okay, as it comes on shore and as he's taken to the market. And so that was not uncommon. So for the guy to shout out, hey, have you caught any fish? It's embarrassing because what they're thinking is, oh, no, this is one of the local market guys. If we say that we haven't caught anything, that looks bad. But they have to say, no, we haven't caught anything. And for him to say, yeah, I'll throw it on the other side of the boat, it's like, yeah, I'm sure they're all on the boat. And, you know, I'll show him about throwing it on the other side of the boat. You know, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Because they're not just going to take a random directive, all right? So I'm sure there was a little bit of, yeah, we'll show you. All of a sudden, they catch all these fish. And that was when young John, who was a teenager, looked up and went, wait a second. There's something going on here. It's the Lord. And I love Peter. Everybody else is trying to get the fish in, and they're just going to sail their little boat up there and then finally get out. Not Peter. Lord Jesus anywhere near him, man, he's going to get to him. Do you have that kind of heart's desire? And he takes off, swims to the shore, sees that it's Jesus, but Jesus has a setup. Because not until this point have they talked about the denial. Jesus hasn't brought it up. He hadn't spoken about it, but it's the elephant in the room. Did you notice what kind of fire that Jesus has? A charcoal fire. Does Jesus need charcoal? Does he need fish? Does he need a match? No. On sand, he can go, there's a fire. But he chooses charcoal. Why does he choose charcoal? Because Peter needed a little reminder. Because when Peter denied Christ, Scripture records he was by a charcoal fire. Now, at this point, Peter doesn't really know what's going on, but he's about to get some clues. What? How many times was it after this was the what appearing to the disciples? The third. And so Jesus has this charcoal fire. It's the third time. And then you notice what he does with Peter. He calls him Simon, son of John. You know what he's saying to Peter? I'm not going to presume that you're going to be Peter the Rock, but I believe that's within you. I'm going to call you what you were before you met me. Simon, son of a dove, do you love me? He asks him, actually in the Greek, a very, very intense emotional love, okay, very, very deep. Peter responds with more of a friendship kind of love. Because here's what Peter knows. I've heard people be rough on Peter with this. You know, he should have said that he loved him more. What Peter was actually saying was, is this. when Jesus would say, "Do you love me so deeply that you would follow me wherever and do whatever I say?" Peter responded with this, "Lord, you know the only love that I can really tell you that I honestly have is a friendship love. I want this, but you and I both know I can't say that anymore." So Jesus asked him the same question again. Peter responded with the same kind of love. He said, "Lord, you know that I can't agree to that. I've already messed up." And then you notice what it says, and Peter was grieved because Jesus asked him how many times? 3 times. This is when I think it went for Peter and he realized, he's got me so set up. A charcoal fire, 3rd time afterwards, asking me 3 times. You got to be kidding me, Jesus. Just come out and say it. I'm not worthy. And then Jesus goes back to the very thing that we just heard. Follow me. And so the sin beyond excuse, the denial of Christ in public, Jesus says, "You are still enough to follow me. But you can either be Simon, son of John, or you can be who I believe you to be, and that's Simon Peter, the rock. But you can choose now. Do you want to be Simon, son of John, or do you want to be fully restored?" This is a powerful moment for all of you who have felt like, "Oh man, I've done Christ so wrong," or "So many years I was a follower of Christ, I fell away. Now I want to be back, but what could God really do with me?" Well, Jesus founded the church on a guy named Simon Peter that denied him publicly 3 times. I would say that God could do a lot with you, but you've got to choose. Are you going to be the person that for years fell away from Christ, or maybe you've never known Christ, but you want to start today? You can either always say, "Oh, well, no, I'll always have this baggage back here," or you can honestly believe Jesus and just do what he said. And that was, follow him. Start over. Get it going, Peter. Quit wallowing around. What did Peter go back to? What he had always known. "I'm going fishing." See, to us, we think, well, that's no big deal. Peter was lost, man. He didn't know what to do. So what did he do? He went back to his old way of life. It wasn't a bad way. It was just not the way that Christ had for him. So Peter stands around and goes, "Man, I don't know what we're supposed to do next, but I know one thing I know how to do. I'm going fishing." So he goes fishing, and Jesus looks at him and says, "You can either go back to the old way of life, Simon, and that's fine, or you can follow me as Peter the Rock." See, the good news for everyone in this room is this. No matter what you've done, no matter what kind of a thing that you think, "Oh, this is so unforgivable," or "God will never really be able to use me," that's a lie. That's Satan's lie. Because what Jesus is saying in this scripture is you can start over again. And the sin beyond excuse is forgivable. But you've got to be willing to do 2 words. Follow him. Follow him. Can you imagine the power of that moment when Peter heard those same first words that he heard from Jesus when he says, "Come and follow me," that Jesus takes him right back to the relationship and looks at him and says, "Follow me." Can you imagine how Peter's heart leapt, where he was like, "Wait a second, I get forgiveness? I get restoration? I'm back to the beginning. No way." No wonder he was able to minister to John Mark and look at him and say, "Hey man, you just got to follow Jesus. You just got to follow Jesus. Look at all the stuff I did wrong. You just got to follow Jesus." You know, we sang that song earlier about, "Oh, how he loves us." And it really talks in there about that grace, like an ocean, that if grace were an ocean, we're all sinking. What does that mean? And I think it simply just means this. God's grace is so lavishly expanded and expounded upon us that it's so much and so overwhelming that we're sinking in it. It is so wonderfully great. But, you know, a lot of times we just think, oh, no, Jesus, you've seen what I've done. It's just so bad. And if you only knew. And he's going, just follow me. Get over it. Let's ask for forgiveness and repent, but move on. I want you to be who I know you to be. So don't go back to the old way. Follow me. I want everyone just to bow their heads, close their eyes this morning. And I don't know where you've come from. I don't know everybody's story. I know a lot of them. And as we talk about these meetings with these people that Jesus met, there's also a meeting going on right now in your heart, and that's between God and you. Let me ask this question this morning. What have you done with that meeting? Simon had a lot of different meetings with Jesus. Some he did very well at, some not so good. But have you come to the place where you realize that you've got to make a choice of whether you're going to follow Christ or not? Are you going to go back to the old way of life? Some of you follow Christ early on in life and then you kind of fell away and now then you're kind of back. Are you going to let that time in between, that time away from Christ, wreck the rest of your life just because you think you've got to repay it somehow when Jesus is just simply saying to you, follow me? That day is over. For some of you in this room, it may be that you've never decided to follow Christ, and maybe you've got a lot of baggage there. Maybe you've lived a pretty good life, but you realize you need Christ. There's no magical prayer that I can give you, but I can kind of lead you in some things that maybe can come from your heart. You can pray a prayer that I prayed when I was younger. And I just simply prayed in my heart the best way I knew it. Jesus, I want to follow you. Please forgive me of what I've done wrong. I turn to you, Lord, and thank you for dying on the cross for my sins and rising again. I choose to follow you. And if you prayed any one of those prayers this morning and you want to get with me and just talk with me a little bit more about what those mean, I would love to do that. You can simply just put, I prayed that prayer on that connection card and put your name and an email or phone number. I'll get in touch with you. Or you can meet me at the back door, whatever you want to do. But I would love to celebrate with you on that step and let you kind of know what the next steps are. And so if you meet me at the back and you just want to talk to me sometime this week, just say, hey, Alex, I prayed that prayer, and I'll take it from there. That's all you have to say is, hey, I prayed that prayer. Or if you want to put it on that connection card, then that's fine as well. We'll find a time this week or next week to just kind of get together. But my prayer is for everyone in this room, and I think if Simon Peter were standing here today, he would say, yes, 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 that's exactly the message. That God offers forgiveness beyond reason, which can exceed the sin beyond excuse. And my prayer is that it will just burn within your heart this week and the week after, that you will hear in your heart, not a lecture from Christ, because he didn't give one to Simon Peter, but I pray that these words will echo in your heart and in your mind. Follow me.